Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod. I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on our podcast, wild swings again in the markets, this time mega cap tech names rallying.
We use a lot of computers, apparently.
And retail traders, they love these comeback stories. Tom Sosnoff of Tasty Trades.
Retail investors account for about 20% of the order flow, but they make up about 80%+ of market direction.
And a stark warning from the White House, not enough chips to last a week.
I think this is an issue of security. At some point, yes, we do want to have these chips manufactured here in the United States.
Plus, a doll of a deal for Mattel. Investor Kathy Wood leaning in to tech's tumbles. And Elton John is staying off stage for now.
Who knows his original name?
Oh, I used to know this.
But maybe there's an understudy in Times Square.
Maybe I'd go Joe Adonis Kernan. Is that taken?
It's Wednesday, January 26th, 2022. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue, please.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin. And of course, we're going to start with the markets because, once again, we had some pretty wild rides. The Dow ended yesterday's session down by just 66 points, but that was well off the low. And if you were watching this yesterday, wow, something to behold. The Dow was down by as much as 818 points, and then it was up by as much as 226 points during the session. So a lot of action throughout the day. The S&P and the NASDAQ also closed off their lows, but they were down by 1.2% and 2.25% respectively.
This piece of news last night, which might provide a bit of a firewall to the market, we will see, which is Microsoft earnings and shares higher. The company reported earnings of $2.48 per share, beating estimates of $2.31. Revenue rose by 20% over the prior year, also beating estimates. And the current quarter revenue guidance now came in above expectations as well. Microsoft CFO saying that demand remains strong across much of the business. And another good quarter for Satya Nadella. And maybe this goes to the whole idea that there we saw a whole bunch of companies last week didn't have the same kind of performance. And I don't know if this is now weeding out the good from the bad. Is that what happened?
Yeah. It was such a weird reaction after the bell, though. I couldn't figure out why shares were down so much because most of the news, just about every line they beat expectations on. The guidance that they gave on the call was even stronger in terms of the current quarter. But that was a weird reaction after the bell. And I was thinking, if that's the standard that every one of these tech companies is going to be held to, it's going to be a very rocky earnings season.
The numbers are just off the charts, though. Yeah. Just the, not necessarily relative to expectations, but just the absolute numbers. Yeah. Just looking at that. We use a lot of computers, apparently. And a lot of those computers use Windows, and everybody's at home. $50 billion. I mean, anything over $50 billion in a quarter?
Yeah.
People don't have enough Windows yet. And obviously, it's the cloud and Azure and services. And did you see how slowly the games business was growing in terms of both hardware and software, both single digits?
Yeah, so but it's like 11% of revenue, I think, at this point for the company.
Well, now that's headed
up. It's going
to
be a lot more.
That's going to be a rocket ship, right. You would think. And they want us to be able to, I'm going to have to play a game. You know what I mean? Because it sounds like fun.
I have a new one for you.
Really?
Yeah. You'll like it because it's like the jumble, Wordle.
Wordle, do you play it on a phone?
It's an app that you put a download onto your phone. And it's because you like the way words look and letters look. It's a little more challenging. Took me a little bit to get into it. But it's fun. You'll like it.
It's scrambling them? Because if it's a hangman, no, it's Wheel like, of Fortune type thing, I don't even want to.
It's a hangman type thing, but it's harder and it's. Trust me, it makes you think. You'll like it.
I'm in the bottom 5% of Wheel of Fortune players. I really am. The letters that are up,
really?
I can pronounce the letters that are up, but I have no ability to see what other
How
letters might.
How is that possible when you're so good at the jumble?
I don't know.
I can't do it.
I'm terrible at the jumble. Even I can play Wheel of Fortune. And
my son, my wife, I'm sitting there, and I'm like, there can be one letter missing, and I'm still like, geez.
I finally found a game I can beat you at.
Everyone can beat me at that. Meanwhile, the Jeopardy champ is like, we're going to be in like 6 years. We're off topic, but in 6 years, clearly, we're going to be talking about Amy. We are.
Oh,
because she's still going to be
winning.
She's still going to be winning. She won $60,000 last. I know. Here I am talking about TV again, Andrew. But I did see it, and she bet 25 on final, and final was so easy last night. Texas Instruments. Let's talk about that. I know you were, while I was watching Jeopardy, and you were poring over these numbers, right? Margins, basis points, expenses, foundries.
You think I'm such a nerd. I know I'm not that much of a nerd,
I
promise.
Well, you're out. I think you're out. Or are you out? See, I don't know. I don't know what a guy like you is doing in a period like this, because you are working it. And you're not out at, were you at like Ilio's or something with Sarah Palin? You were not out last night?
With Sarah Palin?
No, she was there the other night. Yeah, and didn't you show her Vax card and then got COVID?
Right.
I thought you knew.
No,
it's in the New York Post.
I'm reading the tabloids too while watching.
I know.
Jeopardy.
I know the whole Palin drama. So.
Oh, you do. Okay, yeah, that was at Ilio's. I haven't been to Ilio's. You've been to Ilio's like in the last 24 hours, right?
No.
For breakfast, you got takeout. All right, Texas Instruments are higher. Earnings and revenue beat estimates, and the company's outlook came in higher than expected. Then on the call, the company said it plans to place additional emphasis
on the wrong syllable.
Yeah. Industrial and automotive businesses serving chips to two areas hit hard by the global shortage. Good idea. I don't know. We've got 5-day inventory. Did you see that story?
Yeah, I did. In fact, that's the story we're going to talk about right now.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah. We used to have 40 days, and now we have less than 5 days. When we're talking about these chips, we mean the U.S. Commerce Secretary warning yesterday that U.S. companies that use semiconductors are down to less than 5 days of inventory. You compare that to 2019. That's when companies typically maintained 40 days of inventory for chips. This makes us very susceptible to any problems that might pop up, even from weather, from COVID shutdowns overseas, anything else. Secretary Gina Raimondo is urging Congress to approve the U.S. Innovation and Competition Act, which includes $52 billion in spending to boost domestic chip production. Even if they were to approve it at this point, you probably wouldn't see anything that really took place until about 2025. So the Commerce Department, with this report, is basically saying there's not a lot that they can do about it right now, that this is going to be up to private industry to hopefully communicate very well and try and figure out where the shortages are, the real gaps between supply and demand. But demand is up enormously, and the supply has not met that. I think I read that the demand was up by about 17%. We have not seen any increase in supply, and that's where you're going to continue to see these problems. Department of Commerce says this is a problem through at least the end of this year, and they can't tell beyond that. We saw this earlier this week. We had Intel on last week talking with us, the CEO, Pat Gelsinger, about the new plants that they're building in Ohio, and that's going to be great. But again, those plants won't be up and running till 2025 either.
We did a nationwide search for our next mega fab location. And, we looked at, 30 to 40 sites around the nation and on many factors, big, this is going to be grow to, we hope, 8 fabs over time. So a large location, energy, water, talent, we have the all of the Midwest schools, and this is manufacturing. We wanted the place that had a history, a passion for manufacturing at scale.
And then you start to think, do you want to start to subsidize this industry in a meaningful way, and would we be doing it at the right time, meaning if you actually and nobody knows, because it may be that demand isn't the same situation 3 years from now.
But I think this is an issue of security. At some point, we do want to have these chips manufactured here in the United States. And if you can incentivize that, I think that's probably an important thing to go ahead and do. It didn't make sense to build it here otherwise. And we saw the problems that's gotten us into. There are chips in everything now. I think automobiles are one of the real shortages, medical supplies, another issue where they're having serious issues, and that's two of the areas where the Commerce Department is really kind of focusing right now.
Get ready for some higher prices, because it costs more to do here, so that's just going to play into the inflation theme as well.
It is, and higher prices, and not to mention the potential shutdowns. If you've only got less than 5 days supply, if there's anything, you have shutdowns that come again, and then you don't have, which, again, probably drives up inflation. That's why you see such higher automobile prices, too.
every time you get a earnings report from one of these companies, it's like, oh my God, they didn't hit. Well, if you don't have the stuff, if it's right. a supply issue, you can't even gauge what the actual demand is. Or,
right.
So it makes it all, it muddies the water.
And the Commerce Department in this report was also suggesting that some of the middlemen, you know, the companies that get these chips and then turn around and supply them, they were going to be looking at them for potential gouging if they were really yeah. jacking up prices. But you also know that part of what happened during this is you were paying three times as much for shipping for some of these things. So you're going to see higher prices regardless.
In my next life, I'm going to be a middleman of something because they don't have to do anything.
And not it me.
Just
they're just an agent.
Think about pharmaceutical and you blame them for everything, but mm-hmm. no one really they're sort of these shadowy figures that that just are there taking a cut of everything as it.
Yeah, like I said, I'm going to be an agent. Right.
One comment just on the semiconductor thing, because we've never talked about it enough. You know, we talk about autos having all of these problems with semiconductors because there's not enough chips.
Yeah.
And then you look at Tesla, and if you really look under the hood to understand why they've actually managed to deal with the demand issue
right.
In a way that the others have, is they reprogrammed the chips. They actually I wouldn't say they reprogrammed the chips. They did some reprogramming so that they could use other chips that were actually available. And this was something that actually most of the other automakers couldn't do because they didn't really have the people or the engineers to actually do it. So they were actually using chips that they weren't initially planning to use because there was inventory.
Chips
and
for
that's
what?
A very
like an
interesting
Atari
that's
game?
Another
Where'd
element
the
of this. No, meaning there were chips that were available that and they were very good. I mean, this is why Elon
High
Musk
level.
Was so good at this.
Yeah.
He went out and found that there were chips that weren't being used, but those chips were different. I mean, look, there's different types of chips, and they actually started to change some of the programming so that they would work on certain chips. Anyway,
You said if you look under the hood, did you
That's
say
good.
That on purpose? I don't think you did.
I didn't even know, Joe.
You said look under the hood.
I don't think
there's a lot
on.
To see.
It's,
is there?
It's 6:10 in the morning, but yeah. it's a nice.
Yeah. I thought, know, I'm going to give nice. You credit for coming up with that. If you look under the hood.
As you know, I will take whatever I can get.
Good.
Up next on Squawk Pod, the markets may seem topsy-turvy, but CEO of online brokerage Tasty Trade says this storm will pass.
I don't look at it as it's a rocket ship getting ready to take off. I do think the market was grossly overbought, and I think it needed to correct itself. I also don't see this as the beginning of a crash or anything like that.
Tom Sosnoff on weathering a correction and some tips for retail traders right after this.
Welcome to the Canva guided meditation for stress at work. Impending deadline? Generate Canva presentations in seconds.
So fast.
Brainstorm got too big?
Ooh.
Summarize with AI in a
click. Click, click, click.
Writer's block? Release with Canva Magic Write.
Magical.
Stress less and save time at canva.com. Designed for work.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Stand Andrew by.
This is Squawk Pod.
Good morning and welcome back to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. I'm Andrew Ross Sorkin along with Becky Quick and Joe Kernan. It has been a bad few weeks for the markets, but an even worse one for some of the hot trades for retail. Check out shares of Buzz ETF, which tracks the stocks with the most positive sentiment from online sources like social media and news articles. It is down now more than 20% in 2022. However, some reports saying it may have been retail investors buying the dip and powering the midday rally yesterday. So we're trying to figure out what actually happened. Tom Sosnoff is here. He's the founder and co-CEO of trading platform Tasty Trade. Do you buy it? You see the flows, Tom. Is it retail that's buying the dip or is it institutions?
You know, I'm glad you asked the question because it's really a fun topic for me. Retail investors account for about 20% of the order flow, but they make up about 80 plus percent of market direction. And most people don't really recognize that or realize that, but retail investors do make up market direction. So I do think that a lot of the rally or the little bit of the comeback in the market the last couple of days when it has rallied, it's all been retail. I agree.
So one of the things we're seeing here, and I'm looking at some data this morning, showing that surprisingly, levered tech ETFs, this is like the TQQQ and things like that, enjoyed the largest retail inflows on record at the same time that we've had the market go in the opposite direction. How do you explain that?
It's an interesting phenomenon. And the reason it is because retail investors, like I said, since they make up so much of market direction, what you got to realize that the majority of the volume is generated by, you know, high frequency firms, professional market makers, things like that. And they're not interested in direction. They're interested in scale. So retail investors drive direction and then institutional investors pile on. The institutional investors are kind of like the big dumb dinosaurs, the big dumb animals. And it's the retail investors that have kind of that contrarian sense. They also are speculators, they're risk takers. So it's usually the person that's managing their own money that's kind of looking for that little kind of contrarian edge. And I think that's what you're seeing right now. And it's actually a good sign. That speculative kind of that speculative mechanics that's built into most retail investors, I think that's the really positive thing that we're seeing.
But we have the impression, and maybe I'm wrong in saying this, that oftentimes it's retail that gets left holding the bag. And that the, quote, smart money is taking advantage of, and I don't want to call retail the dumb money, but that's the that's the way this has been set up for years if you read the narrative.
And the narrative is wrong. That's the optics, but the narrative is wrong. The retail investors, there's a reason that the institutional investors generally underperform the benchmarks, and it's because they're slow, and it's because they tend to follow. It's the retail investors that tend to make the turn, meaning it's the ones they're the lead investors. And sometimes, like in the case of some of the meme stocks and things like that, you know, it doesn't work out. They try to do things that they're not capable of doing. But when a retail investor senses, you know, that the market's oversold, they're the first ones to go in and buy. And that's exactly what you saw the last couple of days.
So do you look at the last 2 days as a floor, a bottom, some form of capitulation? Do you see this as a stair step that continues to go down? Do you see this as a rocket ship that goes up for all of those on Reddit who believe that we're in for, you know, that there are some real optimists out there that think this is like, you know, one of the greatest buying opportunities. And by the way, I mean, Cathie Woods would say the same thing.
Yeah, I don't look at it as it's a rocket ship getting ready to take off. I do think the market was grossly overbought, and I think it needed to correct itself. I also don't see this as the beginning of a crash or anything like that. I think we still may have some room to go, and there's been some real selling. But you got to look, the internals of this market, you know, a few of the core stocks that have carried this market over the last couple of years, you know, obviously they've had some nice sell-offs here, but the guts of this market has had a huge sell-off. Like, we're looking at stocks that are, you know, I mean, most retail investors have been buying stocks that are down 50, 60, in some cases, 80%. And in those cases, yeah, I like it. I like those stocks. I like buying here specifically because implied volatility is high. That means you have a very decent size expected move coming. And I think that's a very good risk reward.
Tom, when you look at a lot of the companies that have come public over the past 2 years, either through traditional means or through a SPAC, I think something on the order of 30% or more of them have no earnings. And you've seen the air come out of a lot of those companies. I've been skeptical. And one of the things I've been skeptical about is that the retail investor fully understands the incentives around some of those types of transactions. And so I wonder how you look at those type of stocks today. Are those buying opportunities, or are those just reaching some form of reality?
Well, I think you're right on both cases. I think they are reaching some form of reality. I think the problem with the SPAC marketplace, and to a certain extent, some of the IPOs last year, was that companies were allowed to set their own price, and investors also didn't really understand the dilutive nature of SPACs. So I think a combination of those two, and now they've kind of seek their own level price-wise. So I'm not saying the SPAC stocks are cheap here, or some of the IPO stocks are cheap here, but they're clearly not as inflated and frothy as they were before. So they're a lot more interesting to me. Like, we've been buying a lot of the beaten down stocks in the last, I would say in the last couple of weeks, just based on price, nothing else. So I think you're right on everything you said.
Tom, we got to jump, but real quick, 30 seconds. How correlated do you think the crypto market is to the NASDAQ right now?
Well, I can give you the exact number. It's somewhere between 0.22 and 0.24. And it was hovering around zero for most of the last couple of years. So it's a lot more correlated to the downside. And it's a lot more correlated as it becomes a more of a traditional asset now. But it's still nothing like, you know, NASDAQ to S&Ps or anything like that.
Great opportunity or not?
I think price still has a little more downside, but risk reward wise, I like the digital asset marketplace. I love DeFi, Web3, and the future of kind of decentralized finance.
All right. Tom, always good to see you. Appreciate your perspective.
Welcome to the Canva guided meditation for stress at work. Impending deadline? Generate Canva presentations in seconds.
So.
Brainstorm got too big? Ooh. Summarize with AI in a click, click, click. Writer's block? Release with Canva Magic Write.
Magical.
Stress less and save time at canva.com. Designed for work.
Canva. At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate. Pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Welcome back to Squawk Pod with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Here are the rest of the stories that got us squawking today.
ARK Invest CEO Kathy Wood weighing in on the recent sell-off in unprofitable tech stocks, one that has hit her flagship fund's performance hard in recent weeks. And speaking during her company's annual Big Ideas Summit, Wood is urging investors to look beyond the recent volatility.
We do believe that innovation is on sale, and we do believe that it will be really important for investors to move toward the right side of change, given the amount of disruption that we do expect.
Wood said it's very important for her investors to keep a five-year time horizon. Her flagship fund is down 25% so far this year, and it's just hard to argue that you want to be on the cutting edge where innovation is. It just depends on what you pay for it, your entry point. But you look at all the things we've talked about the last three, four, 5 years. It's all the new companies. I mean, nobody has made much money investing in the old state. You've done okay, but you can't help, you know, investors, you know, the inclination is to want to get in on some of these unbelievably cutting edge technologies and companies. So I understand what she's saying, but that's, you know, down 25%. A five-year time frame is hard. It's hard to do. It's a long time. It's a long time.
I'd point back to the article. I think it was a Bloomberg article that was talking about how Warren Buffett and Kathy Wood had the same returns over 2 years. They just got there very different ways. You know, if you were doing the kind of slow and steady on the up, or the real high up and the real high down.
Yeah, I mean, you know. Warren is stayed with the stayed companies for a lot, and he'll be
and
the
Apple.
First to admit how long. Yeah. But it took him a long
Apple's
time, even for
them.
Apple. Yeah. But, you know, better late than never on Apple. But, you know, on some of the others, getting not really embracing all the innovation, but good businesses.
So. Right. Saying he doesn't understand most of those higher technology names. And in fact, when he did invest in Apple, he said it was because it was a consumer name at that point, and he understood it from
right.
the consumer demand of what was happening. A big shakeup in the world of toys. The Wall Street Journal just reporting that Mattel has won the license to produce toys based on Disney's Princess lineup and the Frozen franchise. This is a huge shift. It's actually a case of Mattel winning the rights back from its rival Hasbro after losing to them several years ago. That first happened back in 2016 when they lost the rights to make the Disney Princess brands. And that was a huge deal because Mattel's partnership with Disney goes all the way back to the 1950s with the Mickey Mickey Mouse Club when they used to make toys and advertise them there during the Mickey Mouse Club. They had that Princess brand for a very long time. With this new deal, Mattel's actually going to start selling the Disney Princess toys in 2023. They'll be managed by the same group in charge of Barbie dolls. Hasbro will reportedly retain the license for Disney's Star Wars franchise. But guys, this is such a big deal. And it comes with Ynon Kreiz, the CEO at Mattel, kind of taking advantage at a time when Hasbro had just lost its longtime CEO, Brian Goldner. That was such a shocking thing that happened. But this is a very long and historic deal. Mattel ticked off Disney when they created their own line of princesses, I think they were called, After Ever
but
High or something.
But this is just an amazing success story for Mattel and Ynon. I think
he shored up the whole company.
Started at the company in 2018.
The company was in disarray. Mattel was focused on Barbie because it had so many problems with the Barbie line. So they were really focused on that, weren't paying as much attention to the Disney Princess line. But the Disney Princesses are a huge franchise. I remember Michael Eisner talking to the Wall Street Journal back in the late 1990s. He came to a Wall Street Journal board meeting and was talking about how the Princesses were a $5 billion franchise for Disney at that point, with all the different licensing and different things that they have from it. So it's a huge, huge part of the business.
Physical toys, you know, when you see things like, you know, Activision and Microsoft, and I thought the end was in sight for all those things, but it's never going to be, not with little kids. And you're going to, you know, you like to play with those actual physical thing. But wouldn't you think that if you don't migrate to mostly a cloud-based computer gaming thing, that you're going to be left in the dust? So I don't know if
not in my house. We have so many of these toys.
You do, still.
Everywhere.
I was going to say something really weird, because I can remember 15 years ago, on a computer, I used to play Barbie games with my mm-hmm. daughter, Barbie horse, Barbie this, and they were really cool. They were already migrating to it back then, but it never went away. The physical Barbie never did go away. But I remember some of those were pretty much fun.
Now it's American Girls, isn't it?
American Girl, like a great big like convention in Newark. Mm-hmm. I went and saw that. They're pretty sophisticated.
I've had tea with the American Girls dolls.
You have?
Yep. Yeah.
We do that in our house.
Singer Elton John has tested positive for COVID. His shows yesterday and today in Dallas have been postponed. His representatives say he is fully vaccinated and boosted, experiencing only mild symptoms. He's expected to resume the tour on Saturday in Little Rock, Arkansas. I have a couple of thoughts about Elton. I've seen his place in Venice, not too shabby, and I'm not talking about California. And who knows his original name, his full original name.
I used to know this.
Because someone mentioned to me, I didn't know the other day. I knew Michael Landon, Eugene Orowitz. But Elton John's name is Reginald Kenneth Dwight.
Yes.
And actually, he changed that to Elton Hercules John. I'm not kidding. I like that. It's cool.
What's your
middle name? Hercules. Why?
It's not a bad one to pick.
Yeah, why not? I mean, if you're going to pick a name.
Pick a good one.
Mine, maybe I'd go Joe Adonis Kernan. Is that taken?
No, go ahead. Adonis.
Sort of like calling
Thank
a tall
you.
Guy shorty.
I don't know. That's good. I like it.
Hey, Curly, a bald guy? Yeah. Joe Adonis.
I like it. It's good.
Thanks for listening to Squawk Pod today. We're glad you're here. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 Eastern to get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears. Well, listen to this podcast and follow Squawk Pod on your platform of choice. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
Did you get your very first Wordle, Becky?
I did, but it took me all tries.
It took, oh yeah.
Well, yeah, and it's, oh, it, guys, I still make stupid mistakes.
It took me off. Well, I put two vowels in the first one. I should have never done the same letter twice. That's, you got to be like.
Got to get smarter.
But now I see that. I'm learning.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.